You're listening to Better Half Chats, a dialogue between myself, Andrew, and my candid wife, Bethany. Today we're going to be talking about Job 1, 6 through 12. Now there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan also came among them. The Lord said to Satan, "From where have you come?" Satan answered the Lord and said, "From going to and fro on the earth, and from walking up and down on it." And the Lord said to Satan, "Have you considered my servant Job, that there is none like him on the earth, a blameless and upright man who fears God and turns away from evil?" Then Satan answered the Lord and said, "Does Job fear God for no reason? Have you not put a hedge around him and his house and all that he has on every side? You have blessed the work of his hands, and his possessions have increased in the land. But stretch out your hand and touch all that he has, and he will curse you to your face." And the Lord said to Satan, "Behold, all that he has is in your hand. Only against him do not stretch out your hand." So Satan went out from the presence of the Lord.
All right, so today we're going to try to hit the topic of why bad things happen to good people. Are you ready for this?
Yeah, this is a big topic.
Why don't we start by just doing a quick overview of the book of Job?
Okay, sounds good. So I'll try to keep this as brief as possible. So Job is a wisdom literature book, meaning there's a lot of poetry in it. But Job's a little bit different than some of the other ones in that it has two sections at the beginning and the end that are kind of narrative. They're telling the story of Job before and after all these things happened to him. So it's sort of a framing narrative. There's a narrative at the beginning, narrative at the end. So what we see is Job is a righteous man. God actually, or the writer actually declares him righteous, and he's giving sort of the view of God and saying that Job is a righteous man. So there's no reason why he should suffer. But what happens is, in our passage, we see what happens in heaven that causes Job to suffer. Job suffers, his kids die, he gets boils, he loses all his possessions. So all this stuff, really terrible stuff, happens to Job. And then for many, many chapters, there's these dialogues and monologues of Job and his friends. And all of his friends think, "Well, you must have done something wrong because all this stuff is happening to you and God is just. So obviously you sinned in some way." And then there's this other guy, Elihu, who says something different than the friends. And then at the end, God speaks. And he doesn't really address Job's suffering necessarily so much as he basically sort of says, "Where were you when I created the earth?" And as we'll maybe talk about later, God's kind of showing, "This is the ultimate wisdom I have because I understand all the complexities of the world and you don't." And then Job he repents and once again, God declares him righteous and he says, "Job said what was right about me, but your friends didn't." And so in the end, Job has his fortunes restored by God. Even though he obviously can't get back his family, his kids have died and all that, and so he can't get those things back, but he does get his possessions back. So that's sort of as short of an overview as I can give as to what happens.
After I read Job 1, 6 through 12, my first impression was, this just seems like mean and unnecessarily cruel. Like, why put him through all this? And so I was trying to figure out, there must be a point. What is the point? Like, what is God teaching and who is he teaching it to? And I kind of wrestled with the fact that, is he trying to teach Satan a lesson? Cause why? Like, I don't get that. Why does he have to prove himself to Satan? And is he teaching something to Job? It took me a while to rest. I was wrestling with it. And I started with the first few verses and I had a lot of questions about what is this telling us about Satan? And I was just like, is it telling us that there's only one Satan? Is it saying that Satan reports to God? Is it like, What does Satan do? Like, I was trying to gain all that from, like, verses 6 and 7 where Satan and God kind of start to talk. And then I just kind of came to the conclusion on my own that all I'm supposed to get out of that part is that, like, good and evil are, like, God is sovereign over good and evil. And I, that's all I could, like, definitely get out of that. And all the rest were just kind of questions.
Yeah, sure.
But I didn't know how much we can look into this and just say, like, this is a story that explains a bigger phenomenon, or this is, like, how it is.
Yeah, so this is one of the reasons I really love the book of Job is it's so theologically rich. It's just incredibly rich in all the things that it says, and it really makes you think. And it's really kind of shocking in some of the conclusions it comes to. Number one being, you notice in this passage and really all throughout the book that it doesn't shy away from the fact that God is actually the cause of Job's suffering. It's not Satan. Satan is allowed to do these things only because God said he could do it. And at the end, it actually says, like, God is the one who brought this evil upon you, and it uses the word evil. So it's just, you come face to face with this reality that God, like you said, God is sovereign over all of those things. It's really quite shocking. So what do we make of that? You know, that's the thing that's so interesting about this book.
Yeah, I just kept writing notes about, like, why this seems so awful and unnecessary for Job, and it's just so horrible for him. But the more I looked at it, the more I thought, well, Job isn't as shaken by this as I am. So what is that? What is Job seeing or understanding about God that I am not understanding about God? And there's been times when in my life I'm going through things that are not nearly as bad as Job, but I've looked to Job in this book to try to make sense of it and try to understand what Job's understanding. And I don't know, I kind of just came to, like, Job understands somehow that God has a complete plan and that his family has been a part of that complete plan. Like, he knows his family is okay for eternity, you know, and he has to know that he's okay for eternity, that he has to somehow see a glimpse of God's completeness, and that Jesus and God's complete plan of grace is timeless, and somehow Job gets it, you know?
I would say he doesn't come to that realization until the end of the book, but I think that's true. He, after God's speeches and after God kind of talks about all these things that he knows and the wisdom of God, Job eventually does say, I've spoken of things that I don't know anything about, and I've heard of you, but now I've seen you, he says.
Right.
And I repent in dust and ashes. So yeah, he does eventually come to this realization that God has ultimate wisdom. But yeah, he kind of struggles to reach that point in some of his speeches throughout the book. But one of the central themes of this book is what's called the retribution principle, which is the idea that only good things happen to people who do good things, and only bad things happen to people who do bad things. And just intuitively, I think we kind of know that that's not really true, because bad things happen to good people and good things happen to bad people. But this was an idea that in religion during this time that everybody kind of thought was true. And so that's really the idea that's kind of on trial in the book of Job. Because we see Satan sort of saying that. Satan is saying, well, the only reason that Job worships you is because you've given him so many good things. And so Satan is basically testing that idea.
I'd have to disagree with the fact that you say that we believe that the retribution principle is, or whatever you call it, is untrue, because I think we live like it's true to us. You know, we live like when when things aren't going our way, we start to have feelings of shame, or we blame ourselves or what we've done or our past or the people we put in our lives.
Okay, yeah.
And so I think we still kind of live in that, and we still, that's a rule that kind of, even though we might be able to say that's not true, it's a rule that defines the way we live sometimes. And it's definitely a rule that defines the way we look at God. And it's like, God's doing that. I made the wrong choice. I didn't follow God's will. And now this is my outcome.
Okay. But I guess what I'm pointing out is the difference between believing that in our hearts, which you're right, I think we do, and kind of knowing in our heads that, wait, but really bad things happen to good people.
Right, right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I'm saying, yeah, there's definitely, I'm saying, this is not something that just these people in this day were getting wrong.
Sure.
We're getting it wrong now, too.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And I think it helps to point out, like, we're doing the same thing with our lives now, with shame, and this thing happened to this person, and they should have been, you know, like, oh, well, they got cancer, and they probably were eating, you know, bacon with nitrates, or, you know what I mean? Like, we don't say that, but, like,
yeah,
in your mind, you're thinking, well, I'm going to do something different to avoid those bad things happening to me.
True. So, the thought just came to my head, maybe that's, like, the difference between kind of the religious, like hyper-religious, I guess, like, when we think of somebody who's really pious, and therefore they're really prosperous, like, maybe that's the difference between, like, religion and true Christianity, like, true Jesus following. Does that make sense?
Explain.
So, like, I mean, this is an idea that's common in American Christianity, that if you do the right things, God's going to bless you.
Right.
Right. And so that's not really true
right. Christianity. And if you, like, if you follow God's will, and if you can, like, discern God's will, and, like, you follow it, then all good things are going to go along that path.
Yeah. Yeah. Because that's, like, this is what's happening in Job, is, like, in this passage, we're seeing the reasons why Job is suffering. And so, like, this section gives us kind of three, it serves three purposes. So, one, it shows that Job is not suffering because he sinned. In the passage before this, the writer presents Job from a God's eye view that Job is righteous and he hasn't done anything wrong. And so the retribution principle is therefore, you know, it's eliminated as a possibility. also, it shows, like I said before, that God is the one who is sort of initiating this process, even though
right.
Satan has a hand in it. Like, this is where it gets really hairy. Like, this is like a thorn, like a thorny, really thorny area of theology. Like, we're not charging God with evil necessarily, as much as we're saying God allows it and is sovereign over it. So it's a really fine line to try to understand, and that's the whole area of the problem of evil.
Right. Well, and if you believe that God is all-powerful, all-knowing, completely sovereign, like, God is God, then and you know evil exists, like, we see it every day.
Yeah.
Good and evil exist, then you have to come to terms with this.
Yeah.
You have to come to terms with God is in control of evil.
Yeah.
Which is hard to understand from our viewpoint.
Yeah.
So,
you notice that in this passage, God allows the evil, but he also puts limits on it.
Well, and, like, I was thinking as I was reading this, like, why doesn't God just, if he's in control of evil, just get rid of it? And then I was like, light bulb going off, you know, because I was like, he did, you know, like,
yeah.
He did get rid of it with Jesus. But it's hard for us to understand that because that was, like, something that happened in one point in time. But the truth is, it's timeless, and it happened from the beginning of time to the end of time.
Yeah, even though the work of Jesus happened at a particular point in time, its effects
it's complete
spread throughout history,
yeah,
forward and backward.
Like, it was God's solution was Jesus for everyone.
Yeah.
Which is hard to fathom because we are like, we're just people in this world that are, you know, slaves to the clock and to the day and to the calendar, but that's not God's world.
So interesting point that you brought that up, that the work of Jesus extends forward and backward to all people. Also interesting to note is that Job is not a Jew. So Job came probably before Abraham. And in verse 1 of chapter 1, it says that he came from the land of Uz, and that's not Israel. He's not a Jew, but yet he still fears God. And so I think that's really interesting, too. This is yet another character in the Bible who's not Jewish, but yet God's work extends to him.
Right.
But I want to go back to an idea that you had sort of mentioned earlier, that, you know, we're talking about the problem of evil, also known as the theodicy, which also the creation story sort of brings up those questions as well, because God places Adam and Eve in a garden, and he says, you can eat of anything here except for the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. So God gives them the opportunity to sin in the garden. So part of your question would probably be, I'm assuming, why would God give them the opportunity?
Why even put the tree there?
Right. So, like, I think this is where you begin to answer the problem of evil, is that we obviously are given free will, and in a way, and actually in a very true way, the free will is a gift from God.
Right.
Because if we're not given free will, then our love and devotion to God is not true. It's not real. It's only us being
like robots.
A robot. Yeah.
Robots.
So love and devotion to God isn't true or real unless we're given an option either way. And so I feel like maybe that's the beginning of the answer to the problem evil, or they're not a full answer.
Right.
But maybe that's kind of what's happening with Job here too.
That definitely helps me make sense of the God that I know in relation to the God I'm hearing about in this story. Like, now they are one person, you know, like, this is a God who wants me to choose love when I have other choices, when I have choices of good or choices of evil, mm-hmm. and he's allowing those things to exist.
Yeah.
Because righteousness, if there was no other choice, like, what is it? Like, it just is.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting because, there's places in this book where Job's wife is basically begging him to curse God and say, I hate God. You know, God is not, I don't love God anymore. But Job really sticks to his guns throughout the whole Bible and saying that, one, I didn't sin, even though his friends keep saying he did. And two, he continues to bless God, even though God continues to allow these bad things to happen to him. He says, we receive good from God, shall we not receive evil also? And so it's really interesting.
Did he never lose his wife in all this?
No, Job's... Well, if I'm not mistaken, Job's wife lives. I believe she lives. I may be wrong in that. I don't remember exactly.
There's like 100, like, marriage jokes you can make about that. Like, Satan was like, I'm going to take away everything good in Job's life.
Yeah, Job's wife was not a blessing to him at all.
That's so sad.
It is sad. But so, yeah, it comes down to this question, that what Satan is doing in this passage is that he's asking God, or he's testing God, and saying, "Is there, is righteousness? Is it possible to have righteousness without blessing?" And Satan thinks the answer is no. God obviously knows the answer is yes, and he knows that Job is going to be able to handle that. So,
This is completely random, but are there any like Christian comedians out doing podcasts or something? Because I'm really seeing a good bit about Job and his wife. And,
like, I don't know.
Like, I could see a really good little bit on just the Job and his wife story.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe there's a Christian comedian out there somewhere.
If anybody knows a good podcast with a Christian comedian, like a good comedian, like, you know, like a Jerry Seinfeld of Christians. I want in on that. I want in on that. Not someone dorky, but...
Yeah. I don't know of anybody.
Maybe I should be it. I'm going to work on my material.
Okay. All right.
I'll do a sample bit on one of the podcasts.
Oh, man. Bethany's going to put herself out there as a comedian. Well, I feel like there's so much more that we could talk about with the book of Job. I mean, it's really, really rich. It's really, really full of a lot of ideas. But maybe that's a beginning to help you understand this passage, which is a really difficult passage, I'll admit.
Yes, it is.
Thank you for listening to Better Half Chats. Next week, we'll be discussing Revelation 21, 1 through 4. The week after that, we'll be doing Genesis 1. And then probably a couple weeks after that last episode, we're going to be doing a special episode where you, as our listeners, will have a chance to ask us any question you want to ask. You can ask us a personal question. You can ask us about an episode previously in the season. You can ask really whatever you want to ask us. And we'll answer those questions in our podcast. So feel free, if you have a question of any kind, really, to either email us at betterhalfchats@gmail.com, or you can tweet us at betterhalfchats. So send us those questions. We'll answer them after our final episode in a couple weeks. And then, you know, 2 weeks after that, we'll have this special podcast where we answer your questions. We look forward to hearing from you.